evening, everyone. Before I get started, I just want to mention that as I was putting this lesson together, I realized something that I thought was pretty neat. So recently, I've been taking a lot of notes, some material that's been talked about here at this church, whether it's been from some of the lessons that have been preached up here, whether it's been from some of the classes that we have, or just even various comments among the members here. And a lot of what I've learned over, well, really my whole life here is from the group here. And so I think it's pretty cool that I'm able to come up here and share my thoughts with you all here. I think we're truly blessed for this group here we have at Rosedale. And I'm really thankful that I have this opportunity. So before we get into it, I want to share a story that I was about 15 at the time, and it was my first year of high school golf. And one day I was out there practicing and hitting ball after ball and getting real frustrated. I was lost. I didn't know what I was doing with my swing. And finally, my coach came down and he said, "Hey, you know, what's going on? I see you're upset. What's the deal?" And, I said, I'm just having issues. And he's trying to give me tips, you know, "Hey, put your arms in this position or do this move or whatever. And I would try it. And I looked at him and I'm like, that's weird. That just feels really weird to me. I don't think I can do that." And he kind of laughed and he said, "Give me your phone." And I said, "Okay, here." And he goes, "Do the exact same thing. And, don't change anything." And I noticed he took a video and he goes, "Come here, take a look at this." And as I looked at it, I just remember being in shock going, "Oh my goodness, that looks completely different than what I feel. That looks nothing like what I feel." He kind of laughed. He handed me my phone and he said, "Son, feel and real are two totally different things." And, that's a lesson. That's a general, phrase that I've carried on with whether it been in the game of golf, whether it was with my friends, at school, at work, and even with my spouse. But then I thought, how am I really equating that to my spiritual life, with my relationship with God? And all I would say is that as I thought of this, I thought, am I really as spiritually strong as I think I am, as I feel? And as we dive into this, I'm sure that all of you here will agree that at some point or another, we've been faced with this question. We've thought we've been on the right track. We thought maybe that everything felt fine. Everything was normal, and maybe we hit a reality. Maybe it was a specific situation you found yourself in, but you hit something and you realize my feelings about this and my reality are totally different. So, let's see. Well, there it is, feel versus real. We're going to start here in Matthew 7. And most of the verses will be up here on the laptop, up on the overhead here. But starting in Matthew 7, in verse 16, this is Jesus towards the end of his Sermon on the Mount. And he's speaking to these crowds, and he starts off in this one part saying, "You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from the thorn bushes, nor figs from the thistles, are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, and every bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then, you will know them by their fruits." And, when I try to imagine this scene, it's pretty easy for me. I can picture the people kind of nodding their heads. And this is not really anything shocking Jesus is saying. Saying that, look, we all know evil people that hang out with, evil company and do and say and produce bad things. And vice versa with good people. So really, to me, it's not all that shocking. And the people are kind of nodding their heads saying, "Sure, Jesus, of course." But Jesus follows it up with, in the very next verse, with something completely different. And it's not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons? And in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Now I can see the crowd getting a little shocked, a little dumbfounded. And because Jesus has just said that, you know, people who produce good things, well, they're good trees. And people who produce bad fruit and bad things, they're the bad tree. But Jesus, what I believe Jesus is doing here is making that distinction. That first, that feeling real of not everything is really as it seems. And we'll get into a few different points, but I think that's Jesus basically exposing it there. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, well, one thing I noticed here at the end of verse 21, or right in the beginning, he says, not everyone who says to me. So not everyone who said to me, not everyone who is currently saying. To me, it sounds like something in the future. And to me, I depict it as there on that day, on the judgment day. I can picture everybody there, and I can picture a group. I can picture some people starting to panic, and whether in shock. And he's saying, Lord, Lord. And I can picture something. Please, Lord, wait, please, wait a minute. Let's go over something here. Didn't I do all these things? Look at all of these great things that I've done. And they're just shocked. They don't even know. They can't even match up with what they're feeling, with what this reality that they're facing here. It's not equaling out. So I ask myself the question, you know, not only what, you know, it's important to ask not only what fruit am I producing, but why am I doing it? And really that leads into this next point. And it's Lord, Lord. And I picture these as myself standing there in front of God saying, Lord, Lord, was I not poor in spirit? Wasn't I humble? Wasn't I the one that I thought of myself as poor in spirit? When in Matthew 6, Jesus is talking about giving to the poor. And let's see. Well, I base that off the first beatitude there, obviously. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And real quick, I just kind of want to share. When I remember reading this verse in Bible Lab as 9, 10 years old, and not really understanding the logic and the meaning of what that verse says, I remember reading that saying, blessed are the poor in spirit. So I have to have a poor spirit. I don't quite understand that. And as I've gotten older, obviously, we know kind of more of what that means. At least I thought I did. And I asked myself, what really does that mean? I keep pressing the wrong button. There in Matthew 6, I didn't put this on the PowerPoint, but it says there that beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in their streets so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret, and your Father who sees what you have done in secret will reward you. Being humble, you know, I guess is kind of the general term that we all think about. You know, blessed are the poor in spirit. But I remembered something that it was quite a while ago. I believe Larry had said it in a past lesson that really, I think sometimes humbleness is something as, I don't know, Americans or our culture that we maybe have a hard time understanding. We think that, you know, as Christians, we feel guilty taking credit. We feel guilty in being proud. And really, I think it's said best that, you know, being humble really isn't thinking less of yourself. It's really thinking of yourself less. And to me, there's no better example of that than Jesus himself. Let's go into. So in Philippians 2, starting in verse 3 here, it says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility in mind, regard with one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also in the interest of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men, being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even, of course, as we know, to death on the cross. So when you ask yourself, Lord, Lord, was I not poor in spirit? Am I not poor in spirit? And you think, you know, how do my feelings really match up with the reality? Ask yourself, I guess, look at the things that you're doing. And I really start by looking at the things what Jesus did. He sat and ate with tax collectors, with people who the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders at the time considered unclean and criticized them for it. Are you only sitting with those that maybe you feel comfortable with and maybe thinking, you know, that's good enough for me? And really kind of that leads into to my next point is, you know, how do we deal with people who maybe we're not comfortable with? It says, Lord, Lord, was I not merciful and was I not patient? And can you imagine saying that to God? The kind of the irony of that is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, who's been obviously more merciful and more patient with anybody, with the people of this earth. You're crying out to him saying that. And really, I have a story, another story really to share that just about sums this up and really, really got my attention on this. And it was 4 or 5 years ago, it was my senior year, and I wanted everything to go perfectly. I didn't want any problems. And we had this new freshman kid come in, and he had a horrible attitude, was causing problems among the rest of the guys. And, you know, I guess as team captain, I felt pressured that I had to do something about it. And one day, you know, him and another guy got in a fight, and it kind of got ugly. And they came to me and said, look, man, we're tired of this guy. Get him out of here. He's been cheating. He's been, you know, doing this, doing that. He goes, we gotta find a way to get him out. So sure enough, and I had my suspicions of him, my own. And sure enough, one day at practice, we kind of catch him, you know, cheating, whatever, in golf. And to me, that was kind of the last straw. And the very next day, we set up a team meeting, called everybody in, and I just blasted the guy. I let him have it. I said, man, you've been doing this for weeks, for months. We're tired of it. You know, you're done. And it got ugly. He started cursing, made a scene, left. And it really didn't end all too well. And I remember towards the end, everybody was like, man, thank you so much. You stepped up. You know, you did such a great job. We don't have to worry about that anymore. So as time has gone on, I felt like I was being a good leader. I felt like I was doing the right thing. And really, as I've come to sit and think about how that all went down, for lack of a better term, it was me taking vengeance into my own hand. It was me not being merciful and me not being patient, because come to find out, this guy was just barely 18 years old, moved across half the country to come play here, didn't have any friends. Come to find out, was having a lot of issues with his family at home. And, you know, when I look back of, you know, how I handled that situation, I'll be honest, it haunts me. And it's something that, you know, I've learned from. But I've asked myself, you know, maybe what if I was in that position again, what would I do? Maybe he needed a friend. Maybe he needed someone that was willing to listen, willing to show mercy, and willing to be patient. And I promise you, the outcome, if I'd have done that, would have been a lot different. So, in Matthew 5, I didn't write it on there, but it's starting in verse 43. It says, you have heard that it is said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for the ones who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love whom you love, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you who are perfect, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And this really was a concept I fully, clearly didn't understand at the time. My feelings of maybe being pressured from my teammates, maybe being angry, maybe, feeling like it was my responsibility. My feelings got in the way of the patience and the mercy and really the love that I should have shown towards my enemy. And I think that's something that is so easy in our culture today. Sadly, it is an us versus them mentality. I'm not going to get into politics, but it's clear that there's people out there that try to divide us among groups, whether it be religion, race, or what have you. And it's very easy through social media and certain other platforms to really develop that us versus them mentality. And looking back on it, I did much more harm than probably good. And it makes much more sense to me now what Jesus is saying here. And that's something that I think that really people struggle a lot with in our culture today. So moving on. Lord, Lord, did I not pray often? I can imagine somebody on the judgment day saying, Lord, I've been praying to you for every day for years. What's going on? What do you mean, depart from me? And this is something that I've kind of added in at the last minute. We've been talking about this in the adult class in room one. And really some of the main questions, really the main question on one of those specific classes was, how's your prayer life? And take an overall general assessment of what you think. And it really dove into this topic I was hitting is really, how do you feel that your prayer life is and really what's the reality of it? And really, not only how often am I praying, but what am I talking to God about? Am I really communicating with God? And one thing that to this day, I don't know if everyone really, really completely understands, at least for me, I take it for granted far too often. But just imagine if you're at home one day and somebody you admire, a celebrity, famous athlete, whatever, just walks right into your house and, hey, what's up? Let's talk. Let's hang out. Oh, my gosh. Yes, let's do it. Where do you want to go? You'd be so excited. You'd be thrilled. And we all know that that's probably never going to happen. But we all know this. But at any moment in time, we can stop what we're doing and talk to the God that created this world, created you and I. And I know that we get wrapped up in culture and stuff and celebrities, but think about that. We can have a conversation with God Almighty at any, like when a lot of the guys get up here and pray and they say, dear Lord, hallowed be your name. And it's not just a routine. It's really showing God, like, I am so thankful of who I'm talking to right now. Thank you for hearing this prayer. And I think it's far too often that we go through it with just our normal feelings of kind of a shotgun blast of requests, routines. And at least for me, I'm trying to do a better job of understanding who am I talking to? I'm talking to God, the one and only God. And let's, in Ephesians 6 and verse 18, it says, and pray in spirit on all occasions, with all kinds of prayer and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. So one thing that really encourages me about this group here is obviously it's been a rough time for some of the members here. And I know personally the efforts that have been made just in prayer of the people here that have taken time and concern and prayed for these people who are sick, who have lost loved ones. And that doesn't go unnoticed. And that's something that Samantha and myself have really taken notice to and really have tried to improve. But one thing that I would say that, or a couple things that I would say is, what are some things, obviously, the generic flaws that we may have with prayer? You know, praying only out of need for ourselves. It's so easy to say, but again, I did a reality check. And, you know, I'd say probably 85% of what I was saying without really understanding and subconsciously was really based pretty much all around me. How my day was going, how I want my day tomorrow to be better. That's, as we saw in the previous verses, that's not really what the example that Jesus sets. Jesus humbled himself so low, he was so poor in spirit, he says that he thought of others way before he thought of himself. And then also not being fully honest with God. This is something that I struggle with, and I put yourself in parentheses because obviously God really knows your heart, he knows your mind. You're really not being honest with yourself. And in my prayers, I kind of thought, you know, how much really effort am I putting into this? And how much effort am I putting into really trying to get to know God, really communicate with him? Again, I just think that we, at least I do, at times take that for granted, that at any moment in time I get to communicate with the Almighty God. And finally, this final question, Lord, Lord, as we've been talking about, Lord, Lord, was I not a disciple of yours? And imagine being in that moment and how scary that must be, where you know where the conversation, I guess, if that's how it goes with God, is going. And you say, wait, 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 God, haven't I been a disciple? Haven't I done all these things? I feel like my whole life I was doing the right thing. And of course, we know the account that we have to take, the reality that we have to face. Your feeling, one thing and one theme I'm trying to portray here is that your feelings alone will eventually betray you. And I'm not up here saying that, of course, that our feelings are bad. A lot of the times you hear the term go with your gut, trust your feelings. Those are good things. But where are your feelings rooted in? What's directing those feelings? And so sometimes I think, you know, how can I combat this problem of feeling real? If I don't even know I'm not on the right path and I don't even know it, how can I fix this? Well, it's exactly through the one thing that God has given us that really is the only true reality in this world, and it's his word. And I talked about prayer, and I talked about how important it is to communicate with God, and you really communicate with God in two ways. Obviously through prayer, but I can't tell you how many times, and I mentioned to Sam a couple nights ago, I said, I'm serious. Every time I read this book, verses that I've read for years, every time I read this book, I maybe don't learn something new, but I'm thinking of something completely different. God is actively talking to us, communicating with us through his word. And really, that's, like I said, the only true reality in this world that we need to worry about, that we need to base our standards off. We must rely on something that's greater than ourselves, that obviously us as humans, relying solely on our feelings, it's going to end up putting us in a reality that someday we do not want to face. We're lucky that we have a God that loves us. And we know that this mission that God has put us on is a tough one. But like I said, we are blessed to not be alone, to have a guide along the way, to be able to pray and to be able to use his word. And I would challenge everybody here, as I've had to challenge myself, really, to look at, in all seriousness, where are my feelings towards this and what is the reality? And I think that as a congregation, we do a good job in teaching part of these principles. And it's something, like I said, the notes that I've been taking, this stuff didn't pop into my mind for any reason, for no reason at all. So if you are here tonight and you've had a troubled reality, and you've been confused about it, maybe your feelings obviously aren't in the right place and they're misguided. If you know where those feelings need to be, if you've studied the word and you know that Christ has died for you and is coming back again and you're ready to be baptized, or if you're having any spiritual needs at all, this congregation is willing to help and the members here are willing to help. Please let it be known at this time as we stand and as we sing.
Bidding us look to realms above, while the light from the throne shines for you and me. Let us live to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the throne above. While we hear it ringing, let us heed the call of love. On the road to the goal, burdens we must bear, but we have help from realms above. We receive